In the 90s, I used to watch a show called America's Dumbest Criminals, and the perpetrator in today's case definitely fits that bill. What was great about that show was that it was more comical than anything else. Stupid crimes committed by stupid criminals. Even though Brian Goldsley was definitely dumb, unlike the criminals featured on that 90s reality show, he was also 50 shades of sick and evil. Hey Coffee and Crimers, I'm your host, Belle Fagan. In early 2017, 21-year-old Reagan Toakes was about to start the rest of her life. She was only months away from graduating from Ohio University with a degree in psychology, with plans to move to Cleveland and get a job at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic. Her ultimate goal was to open her own practice and knew that starting off at the Cleveland Clinic would teach her everything she needed to make that dream a reality. Those around her knew that there was no doubt that she would take the world by storm. Her final tweet shows just how excited she was to start on the next chapter. She wrote, "Today my dad emailed me diploma frames and told me to pick one out, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't tear up." Tragically, she would never get the chance to frame that diploma. On February 8th, Reagan ended her shift at one of Columbus's trendy hangouts in the Short North neighbourhood called the Bodega Bar and Restaurant. It was around 9:45 p.m. and because she worked nights, she would normally ask one of her male co-workers to walk her to her car. But that night, the bar was crazy busy and the rest of the staff were rushed off their feet. And let's be honest, when you're young, you don't think that anything bad is going to happen to you. So half not having a choice and half thinking it was literally 2 seconds to her car, she made the short trek alone, never thinking that she'd not make it back to her off-campus apartment where she lived with 4 friends, Jackie, Madison, Kirsten and Stephanie. Over 1,000 miles away in Florida, Reagan's dad Toby and her mum Lisa were waiting for Reagan to call. She'd text them during her shift to say that she would ring them once she was back at her apartment. They spoke most evenings, so it was nothing out of the ordinary. Except the call never came. The minutes turned into hours without any word from Reagan. Her parents understandably were getting more and more worried. But she's young, she's at college, she's living away from home, and they just calm their nerves by telling themselves that she'd probably just lost track of time or had gotten home exhausted and fallen asleep. They did leave several messages on her voicemail asking her to please get in touch with them ASAP. Like I said, they were now living in Florida and she was in Ohio. At that precise moment, there really wasn't anything that they could do. So instead, they just tossed and turned and had a restless night praying that a call would wake them up. But it didn't. In the morning, Reagan's parents, along with her younger sister Mackenzie, checked their phones the second they woke up. Their hearts sinking when they realised none of them had any missed calls or texts from Reagan. No matter how far away you are, parents just know when something is wrong. At that very same time, Kirsten, one of Reagan's roommates, went to her room as the two of them had planned to walk to their class together. Not seeing her in her room and her bed already made, she felt uneasy but figured that Reagan had probably gotten up early and gone to the library as they had midterms coming up. But then Reagan's friends really started panicking when she didn't turn up for any of her morning classes, which was not like her at all. Remember, we said she had big plans, so cutting class this close to graduation was not in her personality. They try and tell themselves that maybe she'd gone to see another friend and her phone had died while she was driving. But by mid-afternoon, when no one has heard a peep from her, they decide to head over to the bodega to see if her co-workers knew where she might have gone after work. But when no one could account for her whereabouts, the manager filed a missing persons report. Incidentally, Reagan's mum had tried but had been told that the report needed to come from the last person or people to have seen Reagan. While her friends were waiting for the police to come and take a statement, Kirsten overhears a couple of staff members talking about something sad that they'd just seen on their news app. A woman's body had been found in a nearby park. Now, a lot of cases we cover, it takes days or weeks before they tragically find the missing person. But in Reagan's case, the ink isn't even dry on the missing persons report. 911 had received a call early that morning from someone driving through the Scioto Grove Metro Park in Grove City, 15 minutes outside of Columbus, informing them that he had made a horrific discovery. Rushing to the scene, detectives find the unidentified victim about 20 feet from the roadway, completely naked with two gunshot wounds, one in the back of the head and one in the face. Her clothes, wallet and phone nowhere to be found. All she had on was a necklace. The only other identifying mark was one simple tattoo. Nothing out of the ordinary, just literally a circle tattooed on her side. Back at the precinct, they figure it might be a runaway from the next county that they'd been sent details of. So while they're looking into that, they suddenly get word of the fresh new missing persons report that has just been filed by the manager of the Bodega Bar and Restaurant.
Columbus Police, Tech 62.
Hi. So we had an employee leave work last night, and she has not been home. Her phone is off. Nobody can find her. So I wanted to see what I could do about filing a report or getting any kind of documentation down.
Okay. You want to... So she left work, and you haven't heard from her? And, like, she didn't report today?
Correct. Her mom's been calling, looking for her. We can't find her car around work. I called the jail, and they said she wasn't in the Franklin County Jail. So,
okay, we can
just trying to see what my next step
is.
We can
do it. If you have her address, we can send the police to her house to do a well check on her.
Well, actually, her roommates are here. She hasn't been home at all either.
I mean, that would be the next step, is a well check. Unless, I mean, do you want to make a missing persons report?
Yes.
Okay, how old is she?
Hey, Kristen, how old's Reagan? She's 21.
21. And how do you spell her name?
It's Reagan, R-E-A-G-A-N.
Does she have any weapons?
What's her last name?
And, Tokes, T-O-K-E-S.
Female white, female black?
What's that?
Female white, female black?
Oh, white.
Okay, what was she last name wearing?
I'm not sure what, let me check here on the camera real fast. Looks like she's wearing a dark gray shirt and blue jeans and,
Okay, and what about her hair? Does she have any, like, tattoos, distinctive birthmarks or anything like that?
Does she have any tattoos? She has one under her left arm. Left or right?
Okay. What's your address?
Our address here is 1044 North High Street.
Okay, where'd you call it originally?
What's your name?
What's that?
What's your name?
Oh, my name is Corey Timmis.
Better do the missing persons report, okay?
Great, thank you very much.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Detectives quickly realised that it's very likely that they had found Reagan Tokes. But they obviously needed someone close to her to make an official ID. So they immediately head to the bodega to meet with Reagan's friends. And the first question they ask is, did Reagan have a tattoo? And well, we all know what their answer is going to be. But a tattoo isn't enough to obviously know for definite. So back in Florida, Reagan's family have been frantically making calls to literally anyone they could think of, praying that one of those calls, someone would say, oh yeah, she's here, she's fine. But instead, amongst the calls that they were making, they receive one with the gut-wrenching news that a body had been found and it was believed to be Reagan, but that they needed a family member to make a formal identification. With her parents and sister being hours away, her uncle, who only lived a few miles from Reagan, had agreed to identify the body that had been found. And devastatingly, he confirmed that yes, the victim found in the park was his missing 21-year-old niece. With a name to their murder victim, detectives realise that time for once is actually on their side, so they are going to catch this scumbag. But they need to try and retrace Reagan's final steps. Security footage taken from inside of the bar showed her going out the door exactly on her finishing time. She was alone, and there was nothing on the footage that suggested that she was being followed. Super frustratingly, none of the outside cameras were working, so everything that happened once she stepped out of the bar right now was a mystery. Her car was also missing, so she had definitely left the premises, but did she leave alone or with an unknown party? They soon find out that Reagan had literally that week previous broken up with her boyfriend Jake. So investigators call him in for an interview. You know what I'm going to say. A significant other is almost always the first suspect. Hearing that Jake was being questioned, the couple's friends were adamant, saying it wasn't him, because the split had actually been a mutual one and they'd left on pretty good terms. But detectives weren't so sure. A breakup, even a mutual one, could be a stressor and the event that causes the person to commit the crime. And they felt that there were some pretty big red flags in what Jake had posted on his Instagram hours after finding out about his ex-girlfriend's murder. Although it may have been perfectly innocent, it did make them raise an eyebrow. In the post, he mentioned that she was now in a better place, which to investigators felt like a really odd thing to say about someone who had been brutally murdered. And I totally agree. Like, people usually say that after someone has suffered with like a long-term illness like cancer, not when they've been raped and murdered. So they confront him about his weird take on her death. And Jake explained that, yeah, obviously he was shocked and devastated by her murder, but he had found some comfort in the thought that she was no longer scared or suffering. According to him, there was no dark undertones or sinister meaning. He was just simply trying to find a way to make himself feel better. Despite their initial suspicions of Jake, detectives quickly ruled him out as a person of interest when his alibi checked out. He'd been with his roommates all evening, and interviewing the roommates separately, their stories all matched. So at the end of the day, it really was exactly what he said. He was just someone who had experienced a terrible loss and was trying to deal with it as best he could. Their list of suspects is now at a big fat zero, until they hit the jackpot. Focusing on trying to find her car, which they know could be a treasure trove of evidence, they check their databases to see if it's been reported as abandoned or towed. They come up empty. So they try a different tact. They enter the car's details into a private database used by garbage trucks that have license plate sensors attached to them. And bingo, Now, I'm not even going to pretend I know why garbage trucks, or bin trucks as we call them in the UK, have number plate readers, but let's just be happy that they do. Because Reagan's car was caught by the reader near the children's hospital, parked on a residential street along their route. It had been a few hours since it had been captured on the reader, so investigators raced to the area hoping and praying that it's not gone. But when they pull up, Reagan's silver Acura is right there. Walking up to it, they're hit with an overwhelming stench of gasoline and burn marks all over the seats made from cigarette butts that are littered all over the floor. What this tells police is that someone had tried and failed to set the car on fire. The gas canister had been left behind along with several ATM receipts, all dated for the night of the murder. Although they show that only $60 had been withdrawn, it did build a picture to police that this was very likely a robbery gone too far. First thing they do is confirm with Reagan's friends and family that she didn't smoke. They say no, so police rush the cigarette butts off for testing at the lab. And while they wait, they check the cameras at the ATMs listed on the receipts and see Reagan drawing out the money with a shadowy figure in dark clothing and a hoodie, with the hood up, next to her. Her keys and wallet were still missing, which is what make Reagan's roommates realise that actually it's probably not safe for them to be at their apartment, as the killer not only has the address from Reagan's driver's licence, but also her house keys. The lead investigator, Lieutenant Davidson, had been working on Reagan's case for 30 hours straight, so he figures it's going to be a while till they get any DNA results off the cigarette butts, and they've pretty much exhausted every avenue at that moment. So he goes home, but before he can even get into bed, he gets a call to say that not only has the DNA come back, but it's come back with a positive match. And the person who had smoked up a storm inside the car was a career criminal with a history of sex crimes, extremely well known to Detective Davidson. The criminal's name was Brian Lee Goldsby. Lieutenant Davidson's jaw literally hit the ground. He had put Brian behind bars 6 years ago for attempted rape and robbery, and he didn't even know that Brian was out of jail. Typing his name into the system, he finds that Brian was released only 3 months previously and was only living a mile from where Reagan's car was found. On February 11th, 2 days after Reagan's body was found, 29-year-old Brian Goldsby was arrested and brought in for questioning. Like I said, he'd only been a mile from where they'd found the car. After serving his 6-year prison sentence, leaving jail, he'd been released to a halfway house and was still under court-ordered supervision. What an absolute joke. The crime that Lieutenant Davidson had gotten him put away for had involved the abduction and rape of a woman at knife point. In November of 2010, he had snuck up on the victim as she was putting her 2-year-old son into his car seat outside of a shopping mall. Holding the blade to her throat, Goldsby had threatened to kill her and her child if she didn't cooperate. Now, not only did she have her 2-year-old with her, but she was also 8 months pregnant at the time, so she had given in to his demands. He raped her there and then in the car, and I had to stop in myself imagining the fact that her 2-year-old probably witnessed the whole thing, because I just can't deal with that. After he'd finished, he forced her to drive to an ATM and withdraw cash. He then ordered her to drive to her house, where he took her inside and raped her once again. He stole a DVD player from the living room and fled. Although she rang police the second he was gone, when the court date rolled around, she refused to testify because she was terrified of what would happen to her and her now 2 children if she took the stand against him. The case had still been able to carry on based on the physical evidence they had, but the state was worried that without her testimony, he'd get off. So instead, they offered Brian a plea deal. In May of 2011, he pleaded guilty to attempted rape and robbery and received 2 6-year sentences to be served concurrently, so at the same time. And that's why the lieutenant hadn't realised that Brian was out. Because only 5.5 years after that verdict, in November of 2016, he walked out of prison and into a halfway house. And 3 months later, made sure that his next victim wouldn't live to tell on him. Now, I said what a joke when I told you that he was still under court-ordered supervision, because when police arrested him, he was still wearing the GPS ankle tracker, issued to him as part of his early release deal. So the device was meant to monitor his comings and goings. But it was found out that no one, not his parole officer or the supervisors at the halfway house, had been keeping tabs on his whereabouts. He had literally free rein to do as he pleased. So as a convicted sex offender, he was like, hell yeah, and took full advantage of his new freedom. The only good thing to come from him wearing that ankle monitor was that authorities could go back and track his past movements on the night of the murder. And to the surprise of no one, the tracker showed that not only was he in the vicinity of the bodega bar at the time that Reagan was getting off work, but he was also in Scioto Park at the time that the coroner had estimated she'd been killed. So they've dragged this scumbag into the interrogation room, and of course, he's denied knowing anything about the case. But they're like, buddy, your DNA is all over this thing. Not only from the cigarette butts, but from the rape kit performed on Reagan. So now he changes his tune. That yes, he kidnapped and sexually assaulted her, but insisted that he had simply dropped her off in the park, very much still alive. Now, they know this guy, remember? So they decide to switch tactic and kind of suggest that maybe he's protecting someone else who was somehow involved in the killing. And being as dumb as he was, he fell hook, line and sinker into their trap, suddenly remembering that his friend TJ had been there for most of the ordeal, and that he, little old Brian, was just an innocent bystander who had no choice but to wait helplessly as his buddy marched Reagan into the darkness and fired two shots. Finding all the weak spots in his story and pushing harder, he tells them exactly where the shots had been fired. And then Brian realizes that he'd backed himself into a corner because he knew exactly where the gunshot wounds were on Reagan's body, which only the murderer could know. So he finally tells them that he'll give them what they want, but he needs two burgers before that will happen. I'm not sure I could be a cop because I'd have been wishing him to choke on those damn things. Brian finally confesses to the rape and murder of Reagan Toakes. And the story he tells them is a chilling one. He said that he remembered feeling antsy that night, so he had gotten on a bus and headed into the heart of Columbus looking for someone to rob, and maybe more, depending on his mood. And that was when he saw Reagan leaving the bodega. Cornering her as she was getting into her car, he had demanded at knife point that she drive him to an ATM and withdraw $500. He said to them that she was pretty hysterical, so to calm her down, he had promised her that he only wanted the money and would let her go once she withdrew it. Probably knowing that resisting wouldn't work, Reagan had done as she was told. And unfortunately, things went downhill fast. When her first withdrawal was denied at the first bank because of how large it was, they tried another machine, and again, that was denied. He was now mad and determined to get at least something for his trouble. I can't even. So he ordered Reagan to park in an alley where he forced her to perform oral sex. The time now was 10:16 p.m., literally only 30 minutes since she'd left work. Still not satisfied, Brian told Reagan to try another ATM, and this is where she had successfully withdrawn $60. And I can only imagine that after handing it over, she hoped with everything she had that this was the end of her ordeal. At 11:41, CCTV footage taken at a nearby gas station showed Reagan's car pulling up. As they pulled away, police assume that the next stop was the park and the site of the murder. He continues his account that once they arrive at the park, which was obviously deserted at that time of night, he ordered Reagan to take off her clothes and start walking. He had the gun pressed up against her head, and she had stepped barefoot into the freezing cold ground. Moments later, he pulled the trigger. According to Brian, her last words were, "I just want to live." Making sure Reagan was dead, he fled the scene, throwing the murder weapon into a drain. This detail actually meant investigators were now able to retrieve the weapon. As if he wasn't sick and twisted enough, He had then driven to his girlfriend's apartment in Reagan's car, where he had gifted her Reagan's designer handbag and wallet. The couple had then gone out for burgers. And this is another reason his parole with the ankle tracker was just one big joke. The curfew at the halfway house was 10 p.m. But yet, here he is at 1:45 a.m. out there chowing down on burgers after brutally murdering Reagan. And yet not a single soul at the halfway house had reported his absence to the police. Their night out on the town done, Brian dropped off his girlfriend, who had no idea that she was enjoying a dead woman's belongings, and continued on his way. At dawn, he bought the gas canister and the fuel with the intention of burning out her car and any evidence that might have been left inside. But when he couldn't get it to work, he just ditched it near his girlfriend's apartment and walked away as if nothing had happened. Probably all smug because there was no chance of Reagan turning him in, so he felt that he was probably in the all clear. But let's just go back to the ankle monitor for a minute. Now, I told you police had gone back to the night of the murder, but when they realised that no one had actually been watching the tracking, they decided to go back a bit further, and what they find is beyond belief. In the few weeks leading up to Reagan's murder, an unidentified man had been terrorising women in the neighbourhood next to Short North, where the bodega was. He always approached them from behind, and each time he attacked someone, it had escalated slightly more from the one before. The first attack was on a woman named Josie Merkel. In an interview with Dateline, she described a tall man who wore a hoodie pulled down to his eyebrows and a mask around his nose and mouth so that only his eyes were visible. He had beaten Josie severely, but ran before he could be caught. The next attack took place a few days later, and this time, the hoodie-wearing man had used a knife to threaten his victim. He held it to her neck and told her that he was going to kill her. Like Josie, she'd screamed, which, bizarrely, scared the attacker away. Instead, he just grabbed her handbag and ran. Three more attacks took place in those weeks leading up to the tragic night of February 8th, the final one being on February 6th. This time, the attacker used a gun. Like the other attacks, he approached the victim from behind and threatened to kill her if she didn't give him her bag. The victim screamed and began struggling with him until he hit her on the side of the face with the butt of the gun, throwing her to the ground and cracking her teeth. He then grabbed her bag and got away. So let me spell this out, okay? Basically, they had control on this monster. But rather than doing their jobs, they had just let him go about his business like every other law-abiding person. He's out there terrorising women in the area while wearing a freaking ankle monitor. But someone has to be murdered before he's caught? Not okay. Brian Goldsby was charged with aggravated murder, kidnapping, rape, tampering with evidence, and possession of a deadly weapon. The seven counts of robbery carried out on the other victims he had terrorised in the days leading up to Reagan's murder was also included in the indictment. Tragically, Reagan and her dad had actually spoken about the fact that there was a man on the loose terrorising local women. Toby had been extra worried, and that's why Reagan had been getting co-workers to walk her to her car, and then she'd call her parents once she was home safe. Now, don't get me wrong, I am not justifying the crime that got him put away for those 6 years previously. But if it had been an isolated incident, I might have understood why he was released early. But no, he was literally a career criminal. And when I say with a list of offences as long as my arm, I mean it. His rap sheet shows that he had been in trouble with the law for the majority of his life. His juvenile record alone was a mile long, including charges of menacing, robbery, and the rapes of two children under the age of 7. You can imagine the shock Reagan's family were in when they found out, aside from his record, Brian had been written up a shocking 52 times for violations committed while he was serving those 6 years for the robbery and rape of his pregnant victim. The long list included stealing, fighting, and insubordination. But again, thanks to more flaws in the system, inmates are exempt from punishment under Ohio law while they are incarcerated. So Brian faced no consequences for his actions. And because of this flawed system, his antisocial behaviour in prison had absolutely zero bearing on his request for early release. I honestly have no words. So he basically ran amok in prison, did whatever he wanted to do, and didn't face any consequences. And then when he was able to apply for early release, that didn't come up? No. Just no. He'd been such a headache that he had been moved to 5 different prisons, which, considering he was only in jail for 6 years, is even more insane. The prison system couldn't even handle him, but hey, that's okay, we'll just let him back into society as soon as we can. Brian had actually been due to appear in court on February 23rd, so that's 3 weeks after the murder, and he could well have found himself back in jail, because although not being monitored properly, his parole officer was aware that he also wasn't being an upstanding member of society. Okay, even better. And it's likely his movements would have been looked into at that court appearance. But instead, an innocent woman went through her worst nightmares before having her life taken. Brian's trial kicked off on March 5th, 2018. His former girlfriend, the same one he had spent time with on the night of the murder, testified against him. Then another woman, who was the mother of his child, ooh, yeah, he really is a catch, hey, also took the stand to say that he had confided in her about the murder before his arrest. Over the course of the trial, the DNA evidence taken from the car, the rape kit, and the cigarette butts were presented to the jury, along with his confession in the interrogation room. Brian's defense team went down the line that their client had been sexually abused as a child, which had forever damaged his psyche. Okay, so now, if enough mistakes haven't already been made, another one took place in the courtroom. The judge had mistakenly told the jury that the defence team was under no obligation to prove that his defence of trauma from childhood were true, so they were simply allowed to take the word of this born liar. This incorrect advice from the judge meant that they took the molestation claims into consideration when giving their verdict. On March 13th, in a fitting tribute because it would have been Reagan's 23rd birthday, the jury found Brian Goldsby guilty on all counts. A week later, he was sentenced to life in prison. Now, the death penalty had actually been an option for the jurors to choose, but 4 of the 12 jurors had voted against it, which many believe was because of the defence team's tactic of painting Brian as a victim in his own right. Today, Brian is at the Ohio State Penitentiary, a maximum security facility where the worst of the worst are locked away. The prosecution did actually file a cross appeal to have the sentence changed to a sentence of death, using the incorrect instructions given to the jury as their reason. They hoped that a higher court would see the sentence of life in prison as an injustice. But their attempts failed. They had wanted so badly for Reagan's killer, who to this day has never shown an ounce of remorse for his actions, to pay the ultimate price for taking her life. Now, Reagan's family weren't going to let it end there. They were beyond angry by the cracks in the system that had allowed Brian to slip through the cracks over and over. So they started by suing NISRE Inc., the company that was meant to oversee the halfway house where Brian had been living. They sued them for negligence in allowing him to wander freely with no supervision. Damn right too. They also filed a suit against the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction for releasing a very obviously dangerous criminal back into society early, even though he couldn't even stick to the law while he was in prison. The courts dismissed the case against the Department of Correction, but they did allow the complaint against NISRE to proceed. The suit ended up being settled out of court in 2020, but the terms of the settlement haven't been made public. In the hopes of preventing future tragedies like this, Reagan's family rallied Ohio lawmakers to pass the Reagan-Tokes Act, which gives officials the power to extend the stay of prisoners who display behaviours that make them an immediate threat to society. So even though there will be like a cutoff point, I guess, where an inmate can't be held past a certain point, this little bit of legal leeway would still prevent violent offenders who showed no signs of having been rehabilitated from being granted early release. And I think that's the key here. He was let out early. The Reagan-Tokes Act was passed in 2019. And that same year, a memorial was unveiled to the public on the grounds of Scioto Grove Metro Park, called the Tranquility Garden. It has swings, a pond with wildlife, a variety of plants and rest areas. Gifted both athletically and academically, Regan Tokes had been on the threshold of her life, and despite doing everything that her killer asked of her, it had all been for nothing. Brian Goldsby knew from the minute that he laid eyes on her that she was going to die, and nothing she could have said or done would have made any difference. He was just a career criminal who treated her like a minor inconvenience, a means to an end and nothing more. I mean, he'd gone out for freaking hamburgers straight afterwards. And then he'd come out with all that crap of childhood trauma, hoping to save his own skin. Apparently, his life was more important than hers. I think not. But let's end on this beautiful note. This amazingly bright young lady who was so determined and excited to graduate, did graduate. Regan's family accepted a posthumous degree on her behalf, and her diploma was put in that frame that she chose with her dad after all. To see today's case photos, click on the link in the case description to join the Cup of Coffee and Crime Facebook discussion group. Until next week, stay safe.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.